Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Araqi Voices. This is your host, Hassan Haddad. Araqi Voices is produced by 1001 Araqi Thoughts. I'm joined once again by Ali Al-Mawlawi and Hamza Haddad. This week, we're going to talk about the end of the United Nations assistance mission for Iraq, which is ending at the end of this year. This weekend, we saw the visit by the UN Secretary General Guterres here in Baghdad to attend a closing ceremony, while the assistance mission officially ends on the 31st of December. To talk to us about this, Ali, why don't you start with a history of what UNAMI is and what it has done?
Yeah, so it's worth thinking about the presence of the United Nations in Iraq along two separate tracks. You have what is known as the UN country team, which is composed of all of the various UN agencies. And, you know, these are specialized agencies like UNHCR or UNICEF that works with children, or WHO or WFP. And these organizations, some of them predate 2003 in terms of their presence in Iraq, because they were working on the Oil for Food program during the sanctions period. But what is significant is UNAMI, the UN Assistance Mission for Iraq, which was established on the 14th of August of 2003 through UN Security Council Resolution 1500. And the primary mandate of UNAMI at that time was to help Iraq make that transition towards parliamentary democracy, to transfer the power from the CPA, the Coalition Provisional Authority, to a fully-fledged Iraqi government with a fully-elected National Assembly. So that was the essential mission of UNAMI. And of course, that mandate expanded significantly in 2007 through a separate UN Security Council resolution. And that's because the situation in Iraq began to deteriorate very quickly because of the poor security situation, the terrorism that had afflicted Iraq. And so UNAMI's broader mission was mediation and national reconciliation and conflict resolution and electoral assistance and many other things. So it had a very expansive mission during the early years after 2003.
Thanks, Ali. That's very helpful. And these UN country team agencies like UNHCR and WFP, WHO, will they be around in 2026 and moving forward?
Yeah, for the most part, they will, although some of them may possibly scale down their operations. But that's really a reflection of the reality in Iraq. Iraq is a much more stable country. It doesn't necessarily require some of the emergency assistance that these UN agencies were offering during the first couple of decades after 2003. But yeah, essentially, it's UNAMI and its mandate that will be ending.
I think a big part of why some of those UN agencies that have continued to operate in Iraq will be scaled down is not necessarily because of the UNAMI mission ending, but something that happened before that with the shutting down of USAID. And globally, the United States was the leading donor in the development field in Iraq, which makes sense. It was the country that was behind the 2003 invasion. There's a lot of onus on them to help rebuild the state. But their shutting down has had a huge impact on the operations and funding of these various UN organizations.
That's an important point, and it's something that has been happening over the past couple of years with the country stabilizing and also donors decreasing the amount of funds that actually get allocated for Iraq. And we've seen that as there are more pressing issues globally, whether that's Ukraine or even here regionally, there are more pressing matters. And so the funding, it definitely plays a role in how much manpower there is and how many projects these agencies are able to take on. Ali, you gave us a history of how UNAMI was started. Now analyze for us in the audience the last 22 and a half years of UNAMI operating in Iraq.
So in order to discuss UNAMI, you really have to start with what happened immediately after the fall of the Ba'ath regime. There is an individual who many will still remember called Abu Mus'ab al-Zarqawi. And he was a Jordanian national, a Salafi jihadist, and he crossed into Iraq in anticipation of the US-led 2003 war. And he got to work establishing a terrorist organization in Baghdad, and it was called Tawheed wal-Jihad. And this eventually morphed into Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and it had a working relationship with Osama bin Laden. And Zarqawi knew, and he understood very well, that in order to establish a new political system in Iraq, you would need a safe security environment, especially if we're talking about trying to establish a parliamentary democracy. And so he went about trying to destabilize the country very early on. And one of the first attacks that he conducted was on August 19th of 2003. And it was just 5 days after the UN Security Council had approved the mandate for UNAMI. And he targeted the UN compound in the Canal Hotel. And so symbolically, this really sent an important message from people like Zarqawi, from the Salafi jihadists, about what they were intending to do in Iraq. Because the fact that they chose the UN headquarters as one of their first targets, and of course it led to the deaths of 22 people, including the UN Special Representative, Sergio de Mello. The reason why they targeted this organization is because of its mandate. Its mandate was to support this transition, this transfer of power from the CPA to a fully-fledged Iraqi government that also included a drafting of the constitution and the election of a national assembly. And Zarqawi and people like him tried to subvert this process by intimidating international actors like the UN and really sending a message to them that they should not take part in this process because of the dangers that it would involve and the consequences. And so this is a kind of an important moment in UNAMI's early history because it really defined the limitations of how UNAMI could operate. It was a devastating attack, and it really led to eventually a scaling down of UNAMI's staff, and they eventually relocated to the Green Zone as well. And so it really limited their ability to maneuver around Iraq and to do the work that they needed to do.
I think you're right. Zarqawi did try to derail the democratization process. And at the same time, he was one of the people that wanted to punish the United Nations for putting a veneer on the US-led occupation. So Ali summarized the bloody beginning to UNAMI's history in 2003. Hamza, talk to us about the work that UNAMI did and what they were able to do as Iraq was stabilizing.
They were able to form a central compound where the different UN organizations could speak to one another, coordinate easier. Keep in mind, you know, organizations like UNICEF have been operating in Iraq decades before the establishment of UNAMI. So it was good to have an institution that was able to centralize, unite efforts, because these are big organizations. There's multiple donor states involved as well. And to be able to have a structure that organized, centralized was important. But then we started to see the political aspect of UNAMI, especially with the head of UNAMI, begin to play an important political role in Iraqi politics. As the country started to have more elections, that became a normal event that happened every 4 years. And then we had started having prolonged government formations. We started to see UNAMI not only help Iraq establish its democratic practices, but navigate political obstacles. And that was both mostly internally, but at times we also saw internationally as well, where the head of UNAMI would meet with neighboring countries' leaders. And that's when the question started to arise of how long does Iraq really need UNAMI in place? Is the position of heading that institution becoming too politicized? Is it time to end it? And so not this particular UN representative, but the previous one, Jeanine Hennis-Plasschaert, she was in the country for 6 years. And so there was a lot going on during her tenure, and she was very public in her meetings. She was very vocal in her views on Iraqi politics. And I think it started making different politicians, different parts of the public have various feelings towards her, as in, you know, this is an unelected person who's there to help Iraq, not be another Iraqi political figurehead. And so I think that was her tenure represented a time of Iraqi leaders beginning to question of whether the time is right to end this mission, which her successor was basically brought on to do so.
So I think going back to the rationale for why the Sudani government made that initial request back in 2022 to end UNAMI's mission, I think that what had happened really was that UNAMI was becoming increasingly irrelevant. Because if you look back at its mandate, primarily it was responsible for assisting Iraqis in preventing conflict, in negotiating between themselves, arriving at deals. You think about the role that it played, a very prominent role in the drafting of the constitution. Think about the role that it played in the formation of some of the earlier governments in 2006 and in 2010. So it had a very prominent role back then because the new Iraqi political elite were not used to dealing with each other, were not used to negotiating with each other. And so UNAMI played that third-party mediator. But I think that over time, Iraq's leaders and Iraq's political elite felt that there was much less of a need for a third-party mediator because, you know, collectively, they have all, I think, come to an understanding that it's in their own factional interests as well as a national interest to not allow political violence to overwhelm the system. And so I think that going back to the rationale, I think there was really much of a collective feeling amongst Iraq's political elite that UNAMI's role had come to an end. And that's really what happened.
I think there's also the factor that, you know, the other organization of the United Nations would continue to operate in the country. And I think that's why the aspect of funding coinciding with the end of UNAMI, making it a bigger deal than it was. I think that if the United Nations mission to Iraq had ended with sustained funding to its other organizations, it wouldn't have been as big of a deal. And I think that's what the Sudani government was trying to achieve, was symbolic ends without rocking the boat too much. But there did come to a point where politically it just did not make sense anymore for the country to have an external party getting so involved in internally in its politics.
And also there was an added sort of symbolic incentive, which was this desire to tell the international community that Iraq had turned the page, that it was no longer a conflict zone, a fragile state, that it had moved on. And so again, by ending the UN assistance mission's mandate, that there's this kind of desire to send a strong message that Iraqis can take care of their country and that they want to really normalize their relations with the international community.
In addition to that, I know within the Iraqi government, there was a desire to end these quarterly updates at the Security Council by the head of UNAMI on the political landscape. And as you said, for a quote-unquote normal country, this isn't something that's done on a regular basis. And so they wanted to get Iraq's name out of the Security Council's mouth and to treat it as any other regular developing nation.
And yeah, and in fact, during the joint press conference between Prime Minister Sudani and Antonio Guterres, Guterres did say that Iraq was now, quote-unquote, a normal country. And so I think that, you know, both sides are really on the same page now when it comes to understanding the stability gains and how Iraq is really a very different place to what it was only a few years ago.
It's a very important point, Ali, that you're bringing up, that this is coming now from both sides. So when I ran into Mohammed Hassan, the current head of UNAMI in New York back in October, you know, I asked him, in this current political turmoil, regionally, with elections coming up, was there any chance that, you know, the mandate does get extended? And You know, he seemed very adamant that it was time for Iraq to take matters into its own hands. But that means now there is much more onus on the Iraqi government to be there for its people. So yes, you want the symbolic victories. You want to show that you've transitioned. You want a more sovereign place in international affairs. But that also means when there is a crisis and you have citizens that need your assistance, you have to be there for them. And I'm talking more so about areas such as disputed territories where there's a lot of conflict over which government has responsibility towards these citizens. And, you know, you start getting into really dirty politics of, you know, where the money comes from and who actually on the ground has responsibility. But that means that now Iraq really needs to deal with this.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, I remember more than 15 years ago, UNAMI produced a very detailed and extensive report on the disputed territories. And they really laid out almost a roadmap of how to resolve the issue. And it was very, very well done. It's the sort of expertise that Iraq needed at the time. Unfortunately, of course, the security environment and the political environment was not conducive for a resolution of the disputed territories issue. But that's sort of an example of where UNAMI played an important role in providing that technical assistance, in drawing on the experience of other nations that are going through this fragile post-conflict phase. And I think you're absolutely right that it's now time for Iraqis themselves to do that technical work that UNAMI was so often doing in the past.
Ali, Hamza mentioned an extension of the mandate. Now, in April, you authored a piece saying that Iraq should consider extending the mandate of the United Nations mission. Why did you write that piece?
Well, I was trying to make two important points. The first was that Iraq indeed no longer requires UNAMI to mediate on domestic matters because, as I said, Iraqis have become a lot more adept at cutting deals between each other without the need for a third-party mediator. However, given the regional situation, which was very, very precarious at the time of when I wrote the piece, I did think that it would perhaps be helpful for Iraq to have an added layer of diplomatic cover. And in fact, you know, only a few weeks after I wrote the piece, the 12-day war between Israel and Iran erupted. And so the thinking was that Iraq really needs as much help as it can get on the international stage to help mediate its relations with both its neighbors and at the UN level in order to ensure that Iraq does not get entangled in any future conflict in the region.
And just to add to Ali's point, another gaping hole that we're going to see with the end of the UNAMI mission is that before Tishrin, the religious establishment in Najaf, the Marja'iyya, they used to meet with the Iraqi president, symbolically head of the state, and that was their form of connection to the Iraqi state. And after the Tishrin protest, that was stopped. They no longer met with the Iraqi president, but they would still meet with the head of UNAMI, get messages across. That was both with Janine and with Mohammed. And so the question that's on my mind, at least, is, you know, does that mean the Marja'iyya is going to rekindle that relationship with the presidency, with another avenue of reaching Iraq's politicians, because they did play an important role in influencing Iraq and the recent regional conflict, and which is basically they were able to stay out of the crosshairs of regional actors.
And that's really a good example of a productive role that UNAMI played very recently. And I had hoped that these were the sorts of roles that it could have played in the past. You know, this dialogue that Mohammed al-Hassan established with the Marja'iyya in Najaf was very important at that time because there really was a genuine fear that Iraq would get embroiled in the regional conflict. And, you know, it really does help, I think, when the UN special representative is an Arabic speaker, Of course, Hassan is an accomplished Omani diplomat, and that really positioned him really well to deal with Iraq's political elite and all of the other power brokers in the country, and also to engage in real mediation with Iraq's neighbors.
So we've discussed the positives and the main reason why UNAMI was established. Having worked in or with these UN organizations, what are some of the drawbacks and what are some of the criticisms that Iraqis had against UNAMI?
Well, one of the criticisms I had of UNAMI was we saw a mere bureaucracy being established alongside the Iraqi government. You had thousands of Iraqis working at various UN agencies, including UNAMI, moving up and down the ladder. And at a point, it did provide employment opportunity for many people, different than the state, but very similar to public service. And I think many took it on as a full-time career. Like, they didn't see it as a short-term trajectory. And so I think we started to see a lot of the problems that you have with regular Iraqi bureaucracy present at United Nations.
And also, I mean, you know, no organization is perfect, but many organizations suffer from corruption and mismanagement and nepotism. And the UN broadly is no different. And I think that, you know, one of my criticisms of the UN generally is its inability to take criticism. And there is an accountability deficit that exists. There's very little transparency about, you know, how these UN organizations that are operating in Iraq judge themselves. You know, what is their mission and to what extent have they accomplished their mission? And when they fall short, what are the reasons for that? You know, the average Iraqi has no understanding of how these organizations operate. And I think that if you are an organization that is working to improve governance in Iraq and telling Iraqi counterparts to be more accountable and to be more transparent, then I think you have to practice what you preach. And so I think that any future government, Iraqi government that comes into power, needs to sit down with these organizations and be very clear with them about what the expectation is in terms of their deliverables, in terms of how do they ensure that they meet the goals that they set out. And so there needs to be a much better working relationship established with these organizations in the future.
I think the criticism that you have articulated is very fair, and we hope that there is increased transparency as these UN agencies do work individually in Iraq and without the UNAMI umbrella. So over the weekend, the Prime Minister, during his press conference with Gutierrez, said that the end of the UNAMI mission does not mean the end of the partnership that Iraq has with the United Nations. It'll be interesting to see how that relationship will change and what sort of working relationship the outgoing and the incoming governments of Iraq will have with these UN agencies. On that note, I want to thank you both for joining me today for this great conversation. That's it for this week's episode. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify to receive notifications about a new episode from Iraqi Voices. If you like this episode, be sure to share it with a friend or colleague. Until next time, take care.